Disc 8. Chapter 56. Nothing and nobody can survive unprotected in the space-time vortex, that mysterious region where space and time are one. So there was nobody and nothing to observe the TARDIS as it spun through the howling maelstrom, the fragile wooden police box exterior tossed hither and thither by the shrieking time winds. Inside, Romana, a Krog standing close guard on either side of her, watched as Skagra turned the later pages of the book. "The key turns slowly in the lock," he whispered, his face lit by the eerie green glow from the central column. "The door to Shada opens." He started to turn the pages more quickly. Suddenly the TARDIS jerked to one side, the engines grinding in protest. Emergency alarms blared, red lights blazed across the console. The illuminated circular panels on the walls dimmed and then flared back up. But instead of their usual warm yellow glow, they too flickered a murky dark green, casting misshapen shadows as if the ship were being plunged deep underwater. Romana felt a sickening, plunging sensation in the pit of her stomach. She guessed the TARDIS was passing through a time lock placed around Shada. Who knew how many thousands of years before? A time lock was the usual way Gallifreyans kept the universe in general ignorant of their secrets, or their misdeeds. They were leaving the universe behind altogether, moving into a forbidden zone sealed safely away from the rest of reality. But this time, Romana knew the Doctor was still alive. He would find some way to stop this, despite his less than impressive attempt at a rescue mission. The TARDIS bucked and roared as Skagra turned the last few pages of the worshipful and ancient lore of Gallifrey. That book had taken Romana back to her childhood nightmares. Now it was literally taking her to meet them face to face. All that Romana could think of, blotting out even the terrifying scene around her, was one image from Our Planet Story, the wild, screaming insanity on the face of the great mind outlaw, Salievin. She was jolted back to the present as the TARDIS suddenly settled. The green glow brightened. The time column began to rise and fall smoothly and silently, without its usual protesting squeaks and clanks. There was utter stillness and calm, a perfect harmony of technology. A TARDIS at the peak of its efficiency, and at the centre of it all stood Skagra, supremely calm and assured as he turned the final page. And Romana felt sick. It was as if the time ship had simply stopped fighting and surrendered itself to Skagra. As if the soul of the TARDIS was gone. Chapter 57. Chris looked at Claire, and Claire looked at Chris. Chris had the strange sensation that Claire was waiting for him to say something significant, but he didn't know where to start, as everything seemed equally and terribly significant. The universe was at stake, after all, so he continued to look at her without saying anything. Eventually, Claire said something. "What are you doing here?" To his own surprise, Chris felt himself flaring up. He realised he must be storing up quite a lot of aggression under all his confusion, excitement, and constant near brushes with death, and it had now found its outlet. "How am I supposed to know?" he spluttered. "Don't have a go at me," shouted Claire. Chris gestured to the windows of the professor's study, which, between the grubby flower-pattern curtains, showed walls of sheer rock. Any hope that he'd suddenly and impossibly been transported back to the relative normality of Cambridge had been swiftly crushed by the sight.
All right, you tell me what the professor's room is doing here on an asteroid in the middle of outer space, he shouted at Claire. Oh, you may well ask, snapped Claire back. I am asking, shouted Chris. Ask the professor, shouted Claire, pointing at the little man who stood next to the doctor at the brass instrument panel. But he's dead, shouted Chris. Well, duh, I know that, shouted Claire.
Children, children, shush, called the doctor.
Claire and Chris stopped shouting and went back to looking at each other again. The doctor turned back to the professor and slid his long fingers over the instrument panel.
A Type 12 Mark 1 TARDIS, if I'm not mistaken, Professor Chronotis?
The professor nodded.
Do you like it?
Oh, it's ace, Professor, said the doctor. Ace, and you arrived in your TARDIS just in the nick of time. I'm beginning to appreciate how wonderful it must be for other people when I do that.
This is a TARDIS too,
boggled Chris, gesturing around and about.
Obviously,
muttered Claire. She indicated K9. And that's a robot dog, in case you hadn't worked that one out either. The professor squirmed up at the doctor, looking a little guilty.
It's strictly unofficial. I'm not really allowed one.
No, you aren't, said the doctor darkly.
For a moment, Chris wondered if the doctor was about to release one of his sudden explosions of anger at the nice old man. But instead, he grinned and hugged the professor warmly.
And there's no better way to hide it than by living in it, you old sly boots.
The professor smiled back, but then his expression grew grave.
Doctor, where is Skagra?
Skagra,
said the doctor, as if he'd all but forgotten the pressing business of the day.
Skagra? Oh, yes, Skagra. Well, he's got Romana, he's got the TARDIS, and he's got the book.
Before the professor could do more than look horrified at this news, the doctor pointed at him and said loudly, but with an unnerving casualness,
I thought you were dead.
Yes, so did I, said the professor. But about Skagra.
Did you really?
Exclaimed the doctor. He peered down at the brass controls.
I presume that you installed a very, very naughty emergency defense program into your TARDIS's subroutines.
Temporal orbit, crossing your own timeline to cheat death, that general sort of absolutely forbidden and highly criminal sort of thing.
Yes, I did, said the professor sheepishly, and then stabilized it with a little help from this charming young lady.
He gestured to Claire. Claire gave a little bow. To Chris, it seemed quite a pointed little bow, pointing at him.
You helped bring him back to life, he shouted.
Well, so what if I did? Snapped Claire. I'm not an idiot.
Oh, is that supposed to mean I am an idiot?
Snapped Chris.
Stop!
Called the doctor. He turned back to the professor.
Stealing a naughty book from Gallifrey, hiding away a naughty TARDIS, cooking up a naughty emergency program. What a naughty little professor you've been, Professor Chronotis.
None of that matters now, doctor,
spluttered the professor urgently. He lowered his voice gravely.
If Skagra has your TARDIS and the book, he can get to Sharda.
Sharda? Repeated the doctor. Sharda? Why does everybody keep going on about Sharda, particularly when nobody has the faintest idea about who and what it is?
Hear, hear, said Chris.
Claire coughed. Chris bristled.
Sharda is the lost and forgotten prison of the Time Lords, she said.
Chris snorted. And how could you possibly know that?
Because the professor told me,
Claire sniped back.
The book is the key to Sharda.
Sharda,
cried the doctor suddenly,
smiting himself on the forehead with considerable force.
Sharda!
Yes, Doctor. The Time Lord's prison, as the young lady says, said the Professor. You've probably forgotten about it.
I never forget anything, cried the Doctor indignantly. I never, never forget.
He stopped and smote himself again, this time on the back of his head.
I forgot Sharda, the Time Lord's prison, locked in a bubble outside the universe. Now why would I have forgotten it?
He gasped as another thought struck him.
Gomana mentioned Salyevin.
He sank into an armchair.
Of course! Salyevin was imprisoned in Sharda.
You can ask me who Salyevin is, Chris said smugly without quite looking at Claire.
Without quite looking at him either, she replied coolly.
Oh, he was a great criminal imprisoned centuries ago by the Time Lords for mind crimes.
Oh, for goodness sakes, grumbled Chris.
A great criminal with unique mental powers, said the Doctor slowly, staring into the glowing gas fire. Totally unique.
He had the capacity to project his mind into other minds. Didn't he, Professor Chronotis?
But isn't that what Skagra's doing? Asked Chris.
Oh, no, 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 barked the Doctor. Skagra has been doing quite the opposite. With that sphere of his, he has the capacity to take minds out of people. But he couldn't put minds into people. That was Salyevin's great power. He could put anything he wanted into any mind he wanted, dominate them completely. That's why the Time Lords locked him away. The great mind outlaw. And now Skagra wants Salyevin's mind and the terrifying power within that mind for himself. And that's why he's going to Sharda.
Chris spluttered. Then he is bonkers. He's planning to move his own mind into every other mind in the universe.
The Doctor nodded.
It might take thousands of years, millions of years, but his mind would be immortal. It would spread through the universe like a plague.
Chris pondered.
It's quite a thought, though, isn't it? Every mind in the universe working together as a single organism, a single mind.
A bonkers mind, according to you, snapped Claire.
I didn't say I approved, Chris snapped back. I just said it's quite a thought for one to consider.
Well, I hope one enjoys considering it, said Claire.
She crossed to the Doctor's side and said,
Doctor, we've got to stop Skagra from getting to Sharda.
Chris flinched. Why was Claire annoyed with him? Why was he annoyed with Claire? And why was Claire so much better at this, whatever it was, than him?
Yes, Claire, said the Doctor. But how?
He's got a head start on us. We don't even know the way.
Well, then we must follow him, said Claire.
Oh, yeah, we'll follow him, mocked Chris. Let's hail a taxi. Follow that TARDIS.
Follow him to Sharda the same way we followed him here, said Claire, not even looking at Chris.
Of course, cried the Doctor.
He turned to the Professor.
You can follow the space-time trail of my TARDIS. Let's go.
He leapt to his feet and vaulted over to the brass instrument panel. His hands hovered over the ancient controls, and then he finally coughed and stood back, beckoning the Professor forward.
Well, you know this vehicle much better than I do, Professor Chronotis, he said,
and cross-tracing along a time path is a very sensitive and delicate operation. I wouldn't like to break anything.
The Professor nodded.
Thank you, Doctor.
His wizened old hands flickered over the controls, adjusting a knob here, a lever there. Claire leant forward and flicked a switch the Professor had missed. The Doctor didn't seem to notice, but Chris was fuming.
Who did Claire think she was?
And while you're doing that, Professor Chronotis, I'll make tea, said the Doctor. Come on, Bristol.
Chris sighed and followed.
Making tea was obviously about the only thing he was any use for around here.
Chapter 58. The doors of the TARDIS opened onto Sharda. There was no hint of decay, no sense of a place abandoned and forgotten. Existing as it did beyond a time lock, and therefore in a state of perfect timelessness, outside the normal physical laws of the universe, Sharda could have been built yesterday, reflected Romana, as she stepped from the TARDIS. Equally, she thought, it could have been built tomorrow. That thought made her wince. It was the kind of thing poor old Professor Chronotis used to come out with. The huge, red, high-vaulted chamber in which the TARDIS had materialized was silent and empty. Romana recognized traces of a long-past Gallifreyan architectural style, much less fussy and ornate than the capital she had grown up in. The huge sloping walls were a dark red, with occasional circular panels, similar to those in the TARDIS but much larger, pulsing with fierce crimson light. She looked above her. The chamber seemed to stretch up and up, hundreds of meters of empty space. Suspended against one facet of the chamber, way above the heads of her, the Krags, and Skagra, was a heavy stone block into which had been carved the complex pattern that was the seal of Rassilon, the same design that adorned the cover of the book still clutched tightly in Skagra's gloved hands. Romana tried to tell herself that this was just a room. A room in a very strange place, admittedly, but only a room. She tried to push down the waves of panic, almost of revulsion, she felt, as those long-blocked race memories, if that was what they were, surged and stirred deep inside her mind. Skagra, followed as ever by the bobbing sphere, walked slowly into the very centre of the chamber and threw his arms wide in an almost messianic pose.
Sharda, he cried.
The sound of the word echoed and re-echoed around the walls. It looks horrid, observed Romana, trying very hard to sound unimpressed. Skagra wheeled on her, pointing a finger.
Built by your race, a prison for the very worst criminals.
Well, you should feel quite at home here, then, said Romana.
She had noted the effect of the Doctor's often terrible jokes on Skagra. They made him angry and distracted, and a weakened, distracted enemy was, according to the Doctor's theory anyway, better than a strong and focused one. To Romana, it had at first seemed one of those theories of the Doctor's that would surely lead to getting your head blown off. To be fair, though, it seemed to have served him well after 525 years of space-time travel, so she'd been starting to experiment with it.
Keep her silent, ordered Skagra.
The Krags moved threateningly closer to Romana. Skagra moved to a high red stone wall between two enormous pillars. He slid the book inside his tunic and ran his gloved hands over the wall.
Logically, the entrance must be here, he said.
His hand found a small indented panel in the stone.
Yes, here.
He pressed his gloved hand onto the panel. Romana hoped against hope that the builders of Sharda had possessed the sense to install a booby trap. Then she remembered the arrogance of the classical Time Lords, even worse than those of her own time, and realized it was impossible they could ever have thought Sharda could be threatened in this way, or any other. But still, perhaps, just perhaps. But no, Romana knew her people too well. With a grinding, crunching noise, the wall heaved itself up, releasing a rush of long-trapped air from beyond. Behind the wall was a long, long hallway, stretching deeper and deeper, more red stone walls and red light panels. Indentations were marked above various junctions and turnings, Gallifreyan symbols, numbers, and letters. Right in front of the hallway, immediately before Skagra, as the wall slid up, was a large control console with a central circular screen. The instruments on the console were archaic, but they were picked out in gleaming bronze, as if they had just been polished. The main panel consisted of a simple enough keyboard with the 723 letters of the Gallifreyan alphabet in the centre, the 13 numerical symbols ranged across the top.
Skagran nodded. The index file. One of the best qualities of the Time Lords is their meticulous record-keeping.
He tapped at the keys. The console and the screen remained inert. Without looking round, he gestured to the Krags.
Bring her,
he said. Romana had no choice but to shuffle forward as the Krags closed in towards her.
I don't see how I can help, she said.
Skagra indicated the keyboard.
There were no personnel here in Shada. The systems are fully automated. The index file is obviously protected by a biomorphic shield, which clearly only a Time Lord can operate. You are a Time Lord, you will operate it.
I would rather die, said Romana. Skagra nodded.
I only need your biomorphic information to operate the index file. I can obtain that by removing your hands, perhaps your eyes. Those pieces would be enough. But if you would prefer to live...
He gestured her towards the keyboard. Romana considered. It had been easy enough to say she would rather die, but would she? A voice in her head kept saying, "The doctor is alive. The doctor is alive."
She couldn't give up. There might be other chances, other ways to stop Skagra.
So Romana ran her fingers lightly over the keys. Again she hoped there would be some catch, some defense mechanism. No. Instantly the circular screen lit up, data screeing across it.
Find Salyevin,
ordered Skagra. She punched in a request, her fingers shaking slightly.
Index, Salyevin.
The screen chittered back, automatically scrolling down a long, long list of names. Names that struck horror into Romana's hearts. Rundgar, war crimes. Sec 5/JL, sentence TBA, cabinet 45, chamber S. Subjatric, mass murder. Sec 7/PY, sentence TBA, cabinet 43, chamber L. Salyevin, mind crimes. Sec 245/XR. Sentence TBA, cabinet 9, chamber T. Scintilla, conspiring with Carrionites. Sec 8/HT, sentence TBA, cabinet 21, chamber T.
There, cried Skagra, pointing to the screen. Salyevin, chamber T, cabinet 9.
He stared past the console and into the long hallway, noting the identifying marks at each junction. Then he grabbed Romana by the arm and pushed her forward.
Come,
he commanded the Krags. Then he paused.
No,
he said slowly. He pointed to one Krag. You will remain behind and guard the capsule.
Yes, master,
the Krag said, and stomped back to take up sentry position outside the TARDIS.
I can't imagine who you think might possibly turn up, said Romana.
Skagra tightened his grip on her arm. The little tick over his right temple twitched a couple of times.
The doctor is most definitely dead, he said. But just in case,
said Romana, indicating the Krag at the TARDIS. Skagra thrust her forward.
Come, it is time for you to meet Salyevin.
They began to move down the hallway. Romana first, held tight in Skagra's grasp, the Krag commander and the sphere following.
A little more history for you, historian,
said Skagra.
Your Gallifreyan ancestors were caught in an interminable ethical dilemma. Could any crime justify the death penalty?
Arguments raged back and forth for centuries. In the meantime, the criminals were placed here, outside the universe, outside time itself, suspended until the Time Lord's great moral debate, he scoffed at these words, was resolved. Capital punishment was restored, said Romana. I know that. And Shada was deliberately forgotten, brushed under the carpet, removed from your history, continued Skagra. So the High Council decreed. The High Council? Romana frowned. The mental power required to blank something from the minds of generations of Time Lords would be enormous. I certainly don't think the High Council would be capable of that. Is their involvement confirmed in all those books you stole? No, said Skagra. But it happened. Shada was forgotten. By implication, the High Council decreed it. Romana struggled to understand. Are you absolutely sure? Here, called Skagra suddenly. They had reached a junction with the letter T marked above another thick red stone block. Beyond this door. Selyavin, said Skagra. He pressed his hand against a panel, and the block began, slowly, to slide upwards. Chapter 59. A chime, like a Vesper bell, rang through the professor's rooms. Chris shot up from the sofa where he'd been sitting next to Claire, studiously ignoring her. What the hell was that? Claire grabbed him by the back of the shirt and pulled him down again. It means we've arrived, that's all. Chris noted that the glass-cased clock on the mantelpiece had ceased its upping and downing. The young lady is quite right, said the professor, turning agitatedly from the control panel. We've arrived in Shada. Oh, said Chris. Oh, it's just I thought it might be a bumpier ride than that. After all, we don't have the key, and it's locked away in this bubble thing outside the universe, apparently. Somehow. The doctor laughed and patted the professor's shoulder. And Professor Chronotis's TARDIS is even older than mine, yes. But as we were following the space-time trail of my TARDIS, we were able to slip through quite easily and undetected. Neat, wouldn't you say?
Doctor, pleaded the professor, this is all quite fascinating, but we really must get on and stop Skagra. He's already here.
He started heading for the exit. Chris and Claire got up from the sofa simultaneously. Right behind you, Professor, said Claire with such gumption that Chris added, Yes, we've got to stop him, because it sounded quite plucky, and he was sick of feeling left out. The doctor whirled to face them.
Yes, of course, you two have a vital part to play. You must...
he began.
Yes?
asked Chris and Claire.
Stay here,
finished the doctor. Chris and Claire opened their mouths to protest. The doctor waved his arms demonstratively and said, Shh! Then he leaned in close to Claire and whispered, Chris thought slightly oddly,
I am not at liberty to explain.
He then turned to Chris.
Ditto, he said.
Then he whirled away from them to face K-9.
Now, K-9, you can come along.
Master,
said K-9, happily, and trundled towards the door, which the professor was already holding open with considerable agitation.
But K-9, added the doctor, stopping the dog in his tracks. You are not to tangle with any Krags, understood?
Affirmative, Master,
said K-9.
Unless, of course, you have to tangle with any Krags.
Hurry, Doctor, cried the professor.
He seemed to have lost patience and was already heading through the door. He turned briefly towards Claire.
You will look after the old place for me, won't you, my dear? He added.
Of course, said Claire, blinking. The doctor and K-9 followed the professor through the door, and it slammed shut behind them. Chris and Claire were left alone.
They sat back down on the sofa.
Well, said Chris.
Well, said Claire.
That having seemed to cover everything, they went back to ignoring one another. The wooden door of the professor's room was positioned incongruously in the wall of a tall, imposing hallway of red stone. The professor, his face a picture of concern, was hurrying down the passage. The doctor tapped him on the shoulder and pointed the other way.
Professor Chronotis, he whispered, judging by the coordinates on your time path indicator, I'd say my TARDIS was in this direction.
But Skagra will have gone in this direction, said the professor, pointing very definitely down the hallway to make his point. I'm quite sure I heard footsteps, he added hurriedly.
The doctor nodded.
But if we can get to my TARDIS first, we can stop Skagra getting it back. He'll be trapped here, in a prison, which is rather fitting for such a rotter.
Doctor, pleaded the professor, almost hopping up and down. It is imperative we find Skagra before he finds Salyavian.
The doctor held up a hand and started backing down the long hallway in the direction of his TARDIS.
Yes, but let's just exercise a little strategy, shall we? He said.
The professor sagged.
Oh, very well, he huffed. But please hurry.
Cautiously, the doctor led K-9 and the professor down the echoing hallway. The doctor looked about him at the red walls with their glowing circular light panels.
Rather eerie, this state of timelessness, he whispered. This architecture suggests the grandeur of the Rassilon era, almost like stepping back into the past.
You are always stepping back into the past, Master,
whispered K-9.
Not my own past, the past of Gallifrey, the doctor whispered back. I suppose this is how it must feel for normal people.
The very end of the passageway opened out into a huge chamber, and at its centre sat the comforting blue shape of the TARDIS.
You see, the doctor whispered to the professor, strategy.
He was just about to step out into the open and vault over to the TARDIS, when a Krag stomped around the side of the police box, eyes glowing fiercely and obviously very much on guard duty. The doctor flattened himself against the wall of the passageway and gestured the others back.
So much for strategy, he said through gritted teeth. I think we'll try this your way, Professor Chronotis.
They turned about and hurried in the other direction. The professor took the lead, wringing his hands and tutting continually like the white rabbit.
By all the suns, I hope we're not too late, he muttered.
Suddenly a thought seemed to strike him, and he turned and looked down.
K-9?
Professor?
Queried K-9.
Be alert if Skagra tries to use the sphere on...
He faltered for a moment.
On anybody, you must destroy it.
Affirmative, Professor,
said K-9. The professor hurried on down the hallway, K-9 and the doctor following.
I rather thought we were going to destroy it anyway, the doctor mused into his shirt collar, never taking his eyes off the professor's threadbare, tweeded back. Yes, I'd sort of taken that as read.
The strange little party continued to move through the deep, dark hallways of Sharda, quiet as ghosts, each one lost in his own thoughts. Chapter 60. The massive inner doorway of Chamber T slid slowly upwards. Skagra pushed Romana through, then followed her inside with the sphere and the Krag commander. Romana looked around. The chamber was roughly circular and consisted of hundreds of sealed black cabinets that resembled upright coffins. They were arranged regularly around the curving walls. Each cabinet was marked with an identifying sequence of numbers and letters in Gallifreyan notation. A connecting ramp led to higher levels, the cabinets stretching upwards into the darkness.
The prisoners of Sharda, said Skagra, each in their own separate cryogenic cell, alive but frozen in time, in perpetual imprisonment.
He turned to Romana with a slight smirk.
A very humane solution, don't you think?
Romana shrugged.
Don't look at me. I'm not answerable for the Time Lords. Soon, no one will be, said Skagra. As the Time Lords, like every other race, will become irrelevant.
Romana coughed.
You're starting to get that mad gleam in your eye that the doctor was talking about, she said, with a small sigh. I knew you would. This is, after all, quite insane.
Skagra walked slowly closer to her.
You are afraid.
Romana tried to keep her gaze level. The longer she kept him talking, the greater the chance that something, anything, might stop him.
Of course, I'd be insane if I wasn't afraid, she said. There will be no fear in the universal mind, said Skagra. But perhaps just one last time, I should like to see that primitive animal emotion. I should like to see your fear, your terror, the terror of a Time Lord.
You are seeing it, said Romana.
Is it worth it?
Skagra smiled, a broad, terrible smile, and strode to the nearest cabinet. He read the nameplate.
Subjatric the Tyrant.
Then he punched out a command sequence into a tiny panel built into the side of the cabinet. Immediately there was a scrape and a clank from somewhere deep in the dormant machinery. The door of the cabinet shuddered. Icy vapour began to swirl from within, the chemical tang catching at Romana's throat. Skagra moved to the next cabinet and read off its nameplate.
Rundgar, brother to Subjatric. Together they dragged Gallifrey down into a second dark age.
He punched at the cabinet's panel, and there was another clanking noise and more freezing cryogenic gas swirled.
What are you doing, Skagra?
Demanded Romana.
You came here for Salievin. These others can't possibly mean anything to you.
Skagra moved to another cabinet.
But they mean something to you, he said. It is a rare honor to bring a Time Lord's nightmares to life.
He entered the release code. Again, the vapor poured out.
Lady Scintilla, he read from the nameplate. And my actions have a practical purpose, as ever. They, along with you, of course, can become the first to participate in the universal mind.
Romana watched appalled as the doors of the cabinets, each one containing a forgotten horror of Gallifreyan civilization, began slowly to creak open. Chapter 61. Chris decided to break the silence. It was hard to think of anything worth saying to Claire in the face of the incredible events of the last few hours, and he'd have to choose his words carefully to avoid another argument. He was tempted to observe that it was odd how some days turned out, but realized that would just sound incredibly trite. Then he considered launching into a detailed and no doubt pertinent reappraisal of what their experiences might mean for science. But something told him that Claire might murder him before he could get to any particularly juicy bits of insight. So, as the universe might soon be coming to what might as well be an end, he decided to say, I love you. It was surprisingly easy once he'd made the actual decision. His lips were ready at last to form the first of those three little words. Here goes.
Chris, said Claire, breaking the silence. There's something very strange about Professor Chronotis.
Chris's moment was lost.
Why single out the professor?
He asked instead, surprised and disappointed at how easily he'd given up. He looked anxiously towards the door. And who knows what's going on out there? Aliens, time travellers, ghosts,
tin dogs, they're all odd. Perhaps we can find out what's happening, said Claire. She got up from the sofa and examined the control console. There should be a scanner, and we could throw out an external line. She drummed her fingers on the edge of the panel. I don't like getting left behind, continued Chris. I mean, just because we come from Earth doesn't give everyone the right to be patronizing to us. Claire selected a control on the panel. I wouldn't, Chris advised, jumping up to guide her away from it. He looked down at the maze of instrumentation, shaking his head. Admittedly, all this does make us look a bit primitive. I don't even have the faintest idea how it all works. I have, said Claire, and pressed the control. Immediately, there was the whir and tick of hidden hydraulics, and a small screen extended from the control console. The screen showed a large, empty, red-walled hallway. Chris blinked. You have? He looked between Claire and the screen. Yeah, you obviously have. A thought struck him, and it would explain so much. Of course! You're from another planet, he spluttered. Claire rolled her eyes and punched him on the shoulder. No, you Burke, I'm from Fallowfield. Now listen, I need to tell you something about the professor. She frowned and drummed her fingers on the panel again, as if trying to catch a fading thought. Well, go on then, urged Chris. Tell me. Claire tapped the screen. The image translator's bust into the real-world interface. It reads off the exact N-space coordinates. Chris coughed. That's what you needed to tell me? No, said Claire after a pause, as if she was fighting some block of confusion in her mind. It was something about the professor? Prompted Chris, a little worried. Claire was many things, but she was not a scatterbrain. He blinked, and she was not a technical expert. She knew what she needed to know about the apparatus used in her field, but nothing beyond that. When he'd tried to interest her in his little proton accelerator, she'd turned up her nose and suggested they go to the pub. He realized Claire was staring at him, as if willing him to ask the right question. He'd often had that feeling from her, but this time she seemed almost desperate. What you're trying to say is that the professor's been teaching you how to work his machine? Claire frowned. Yes, no, he didn't teach me. He showed me. She glanced between the control panel and Chris's concerned face. Chris, it all just sort of appeared in my head, like the professor barged in the front door of my mind and shuffled my thoughts about. Suddenly I understand it all. I don't understand how I understand it. Chris sighed with relief and patted Claire on the shoulder. There, there, Keatley. It's just these TARDIS machines of theirs, he said confidently. They let us understand any alien languages we might come across. The doctor explained it. They rearrange the thoughts of their passengers automatically. It's nothing to worry about. Claire groaned. Don't be stupid, Chris. I think I know the difference between a simple extruded telepathic circuit's field of operation and psychoactive addition. Chris licked his lips. A thought, a very uncomfortable one, was forming at the back of his own mind. Claire, he said slowly, did you just say psychoactive addition? He thought back to the aftermath of the Sphere's attack on the professor. Claire shrugged. Yes. And such a power would be the opposite of psychoactive extraction, I guess. Claire nodded. Obviously. She blinked and shook her head. But I don't know how he made me know that it's obvious. I think I'm just beginning to understand, said Chris. It was all adding up about Professor Chronotis, the book, the miraculous return from the dead, and now this. He made decisively for the door. Wait here, he ordered Claire. No way, said Claire, very aggressively. And then she said, all right then, very agreeably, as if she was a completely different person. It looked as if she was surprising herself. Probably, thought Chris, she was. And this was all confirming his theory. Chris hovered at the door. I've got to go after the doctor. You'll be safer here. He sneaked the door open.
That's fine, said Claire. I must stay here. Look after the old place.
Chris nodded slowly. Then he turned and set off decisively into Sharda. And Claire, who hated being left behind, turned with a smile back to the scanner and began to search for an external line subroutine on the image translator as if it was the most natural thing in the world. Chapter 62. Lady Scintilla, greatest of the visionaries, stepped from the cabinet where she had been imprisoned for countless thousands of years. She was quite unlike the illustration in Our Planet Story, reflected Romana. Not at all that haughty, flame-haired woman in red robes. The real Lady Scintilla was short, even dumpy, and she wore a simple orange tunic with the number of her cell stenciled on the sleeve. Her eyes stared forward, unseeing, her consciousness blurred from the cryogenic process. But there was one thing those illustrators of Gallifreyan nursery books had got absolutely right. Scintilla's slender fingers ended in 6-inch razor-sharp nails painted blood red. From the other cabinets staggered the tyrant brothers Subjatric and Rundgar, similarly attired in orange prisoners' suits. They were tall, with the high domed foreheads, long sallow faces, and beaked noses so typical of the older Prydonian families. But there was, even in their current mindless state as they recovered from cryogenic immurement, a savageness and cruelty in those features. The innate primitivism that had caused them to usurp the powers of the then president and wage terrible war on their own people. Romana called across to Skagra, who stood almost mesmerized before the reviving criminals.
They'll be fully awake soon, Skagra. I wouldn't give much for our chances when they come to.
Thank you for the reminder, Skagra said neatly. The time has come, the beginning of the universal mind.
He sounded as if he could scarcely believe it himself. With a swift, cutting gesture, he summoned the sphere into his gloved hand. Then he walked slowly and reverently towards another of the black, slab-like cabinets. He reached out with his free hand and gently touched its ebonite surface.
In here, the man I have sought for so many long, long years, the man whose power I will use to reshape the entire universe.
His fingers moved to the cabinet's small input panel. Romana felt black despair. In this, the darkest moment of her life, she permitted herself a supremely illogical and unscientific whim. Surrounded by nightmares of her childhood, as alone as she had ever been, she closed her eyes and wished. She wished the doctor was here. Skagra's gloved index finger tapped at the control panel, beginning to key in the release code.
Let Sally Avin be released, he whispered. Sorry to intrude again, Skagra, said a voice suddenly.
The voice of the man Romana had wished for.
But I really wouldn't do that if I were you.
Skagra's head whipped round. The Krag commander's head whipped round. Romana, a smile illuminating her face, turned her head slowly and opened her eyes. In the doorway stood the doctor, K-9 at his feet, and, incredibly, impossibly, the absolutely, definitely dead Professor Chronotis at his side. Romana hadn't even dared wish for that. But how wonderful it was to see the nice old man again.
Doctor!
Gurgled Skagra, more than just a hint of a mad gleam in his eyes, the tick over his right temple kicking dangerously.
Well, if it's not him, it's someone very handsome wearing his scarf, said the doctor, striding into the chamber.
He patted Romana gently on the back.
Hello, Romana. Not dead, I see. Good, good.
He blinked at the three prisoners, who were milling about like zombies by their cabinets.
Quite a party you've got going here, Skagra.
I don't think much of this lot. They look half cut already. And it's always best to try for a good mix of evil and not evil on the guest list, I find.
He nodded to the Krag commander.
You need to have a word with your bouncer. So is nobody going to offer me a crisp?
Chronotis shot forward, passing the apparently casual doctor with surprising agility.
Skagra, stop! You must not release Salyavin!
Skagra signalled to the Krag commander. It stomped angrily towards the intruder's glowing claw outstretched. Chronotis was forced to retreat by the intense heat, staggering back into the doctor's arms.
You're too late, cried Skagra.
He pressed the final key in the sequence and stood back, eyes glittering.
Salyavin is released, he cried.
The inner mechanism of the cabinet clunked. Cryogenic gas swirled from within. The heavy door creaked slowly. Open. Romana looked instinctively for the doctor's reaction. To her amazement, he wore an expression that seemed knowing and slightly amused.
The door swung fully open.
There was nobody inside. Skagra stared into the cabinet. He seemed to see something through the dissipating vapour.
Then he let out a guttural animal cry and collapsed to his knees, the sphere falling from his grasp and hovering distantly, as if confused. Careful what you wish for, Skagra, said the doctor, almost pityingly. Salyavin, whispered Skagra in a small, broken voice. Where is Salyavin?
The doctor ushered Romana, K-9, and the professor gently forward. The Krag commander, seemingly baffled by this turn of events, simply let them pass. Romana looked beyond Skagra and into the empty cabinet. Where the great mind outlaw should have been was nothing but a sheet of paper fastened to the back wall with a drawing pin. Romana gasped at the message it bore. It was the ancient V of Rassilon, the greatest and rudest insult of the dark times. The script beneath read, in old High Gallifreyan,
Ha, ha, ha. You, love, Salyavin.
Though remarkably flexible in its usage, this phrase is unfortunately untranslatable from Old High Gallifreyan into Earth English. Very roughly speaking, it conveys disdain, contempt, and extreme annoyance, all wrapped up in a generally obscene etymological parcel that is far ruder than any reader of this book can possibly imagine. For this reason, it has also been deleted from The Matrix.
No, this cannot be,
whimpered Skagra.
My life's work, the universal mind.
The doctor gently lifted Skagra to his feet.
The dream is over, Skagra, he said almost sadly. The great Salyavin fooled all of us. He escaped from Sharda centuries ago.
Skagra almost fell into the doctor's arms. Tears began to cascade from his eyes.
Help me, he wailed. Please, help me, doctor.
Oh, don't you worry, said the doctor, looking around at Romana, Professor Chronotis, and K-9. There's nothing for any of us to worry about now.
Skagra's anguished sobs grew louder. The doctor patted him on the back.
There, there. It probably wouldn't have worked out anyway.
Between you and me, Skagra, using that one little sphere to dominate the minds of everyone in the universe would have taken an incredibly long time. Probably more time than the old thing's got left to it anyway. I don't honestly think you'd thought that bit through properly.
Chronotis had shuffled past the Krag and was looking into the empty cabinet. He tugged at the doctor's sleeve.
Then it really is all over, doctor?
The doctor nodded.
Yes, Professor Chronotis.
He smiled warmly down at the little old man.
We'll clean up a bit, find poor old Skagra here the help he so desperately needs, get these charming people, he indicated the ancient outlaws, back to sleep, and then I see no reason why Shada shouldn't stay a secret, as Salyevin intended. Then we all go home for tea and crackers.
As Salyevin intended? Queried Romana.
He was the great mind outlaw, remember? Said the doctor. And what a great escape he made. What better than to vamoose and then use your mind powers to make your jailers forget there was ever a jail in the first place?
Chris Parsons hurried through the deep, dark red hallways of Shada. At last he would prove himself, at last he was going to be useful, and at last he'd show the universe in general, and Claire in particular, that he was no slouch. There were no flies on Chris Parsons, whatever that meant. He heard raised voices ahead and ran faster towards them.
But Doctor, he heard Romana saying, where is Salyevin? Someone with his power loose in the universe? It's a terrifying thought.
Chris rounded a corner and burst through an open doorway into a scene of utter confusion. There were three zombies in orange tunics milling about. There was a Krag which somehow looked as if it was questioning its purpose in life. And there was Romana, standing with K-9 and the Professor, all three looking over at the Doctor, who for some incredible reason had Skagra cradled in his arms like a frightened toddler. Above their heads, the sphere was drifting disconsolately around.
Don't you worry about Salyevin, Romana, the doctor was saying. Probably long dead by now.
Chris ran towards the doctor, waving his arms as if in warning. All eyes turned to him.
Salyevin!
He cried, almost out of breath.
The doctor, face suddenly grave, put up a warning hand. Bristol! No!
He bellowed. At exactly the same time, Chris jabbed his finger manically at Professor Chronotis and shouted,
It's him! The Professor! He's not the Professor! He's Salyevin!
There was a shocked silence. Then Skagra slowly raised his head from the doctor's shoulder, his eyes now glittering not with tears, but with renewed purpose and devilish intent, fixed on Professor Chronotis.
Oh,
said the doctor. Part 6. Brought to book. Chapter 63. There was a moment of silence. It was followed by a moment of utter confusion, as everything seemed to happen at once. Skagra pulled himself free of the doctor and gestured exultantly to the sphere. Professor Chronotis ripped off his glasses and stared meaningfully at Skagra. The doctor shouted, K-9, the sphere, blast it! The Krag commander straightened up manfully. The sphere zoomed towards Professor Chronotis. K-9's nose laser loosed a sizzling bright red beam at the sphere. The sphere shattered, but not into fragments. It divided. There were now 10 spheres, smaller, but identical in every other way to the original. One of the small spheres attached itself to the forehead of Professor Chronotis. The professor dropped to his knees in agony, his glasses flying from his hand. The doctor raced towards his old friend. His path was blocked instantly by the remaining spheres.
Salyevin, cried Skagra. At last, it is my destiny.
He pointed to the sphere on the professor's forehead and barked.
Total extraction. Break through his barriers. Remove the mind of Salyevin.
At about this point, Chris Parsons began to wonder if he'd done something wrong. The professor gave a final agonized cry. Then, suddenly, he straightened, got to his feet with remarkable agility, and turned to face Skagra. His face was totally blank. The sphere still attached to his forehead. Professor Chronotis's eyes were now jet black orbs. Then Skagra did something none of them had ever seen before. He threw back his head and laughed. It was as extreme an emotional reaction as the tears he had dried only moments before. Romana stepped back in revulsion from this appalling sight. The laughter ended as abruptly as it had begun.
"Now, Doctor," said Skagra, seemingly as composed as ever,
"you shall see the beginning of the universal mind."
He swept a hand in a grand gesture. 9 of the spheres broke formation and scattered around the chamber. 3 of them settled on the foreheads of Subjatric, Rundgar and Scintilla, the ancient outlaws. Immediately, they snapped to attention, faces blank, eyes black. Another sphere zoomed down, attached itself to the metallic head of K9. His red eye screen flickered and turned black. Chris was too busy looking at this in utter horror to see another sphere heading straight for him. Immediately it touched his forehead, he straightened to attention, his face blank, his eyes black. And Skagra's laugh began anew. But now the chamber rang with laughter, many different voices joining to form a cacophony of almost childish cruelty and derision. Everyone affixed by a sphere was now part of the ghastly chorus. The little professor, the ancient outlaws, Chris, even K9. Laughing and laughing in exactly the same rhythm as Skagra, laughing at the Doctor and Romana. Romana huddled closer to the Doctor as they were surrounded by the laughing mind slaves, their black eyes shining. Skagra stopped laughing. The mind slaves stopped laughing, their expressions mirroring the triumph on Skagra's face. Even K9 somehow exuded an air of vicious smugness and superiority. Skagra stepped smoothly and slowly away from the empty cabinet.
"Now, Doctor, Romana," said Skagra, "I have the power of Saliavin. You have been privileged to witness the birth of the universal mind. My mission is not to bring death, but life."
The Doctor couldn't keep the disgust from his voice.
"You call that life?"
he sneered, indicating the slaves. Skagra held up a gloved finger.
"But you didn't let me finish, Doctor."
"Yes, I bring life.
But in your case, I intend to make an exception."
The Doctor and Romana huddled together as the mind slaves of Skagra moved as one around them, arms outstretched. Chris, the Professor, and K9 moved closer still, K9 extending his nose laser.
Their own friends were going to kill them.
End of Disc 8.